Welcome to VideoCraft, an exhibition at the Museum of Craft and Design. We're so glad you're here to enjoy the art either on-site or online. This guide is an invitation to spend some extra time with us, getting to know about the artists and their art. A little bit about the exhibition. VideoCraft brings together contemporary artists who use materials to communicate a sense of touch. We call this merging of the hand and the eye, the haptic. Using a variety of materials and technologies, from moving images to sewn quilts and slip-casted ceramics, the artists exploit the tactile qualities of their media, bringing film and digital video technologies into dialogue with craft, encourages broader thinking about process, materiality, and the moving image. Some artists extend the visual languages of both video and craft by sampling and reconfiguring imagery. Others encode or translate information from one media system or material into another, eliciting new interpretations of known structures. In looping media, artists manipulate the time and pace in which we read images and patterns, sometimes transforming our tactile understanding of them. Qualities once used to distinguish video and craft as distinct categories now provide the pathway to reconsider their media forms and the historical associations within them. When encountered together, video gains the sensorial, embodied texture of the handmade, while craft sheds its static nature to adopt the technicolor vibrancy and shifting currents of the moving image. VideoCraft ultimately reveals the generative points of connection between these seemingly estranged disciplines. This exhibition was curated by Sarah Mills and Ariel Zacchio. We recognize that the soft fibers and textiles in many of these works may seem inviting to explore, and we ask that patrons do not touch any of the pieces. Our Make Art Lab is an interactive space with hands-on opportunities to develop your own fiber craft skill sets. Jump ahead to 9 minutes and 55 seconds if you do not need assistance navigating the space. Navigating. Entering the museum from the street, the galleries with artwork are straight ahead past the lobby and the store. On a large diagonal wall to the left as you approach, VideoCraft appears in bold black letters at the center of a vinyl design that is based off of a broadcast television calibration pattern. On top of the vinyl, a projector plays a video that looks like glitches, fuzz, snow, and other visual effects of old television sets or VHS tapes. Entering the galleries past the diagonal wall, the exhibition space is a bright, high-ceilinged industrial hall with a polished cement floor. The exhibition has been laid out in four areas and the Make Art Lab all the way to the back. Some objects are presented on low platforms, some hang from the ceiling, and some hang directly on the wall. The galleries have a hanging system of track lights illuminating the artwork. You are currently in the first exhibition area. The nearest piece as you enter is Kate Nartker's Green Screen. Jump to 9 minutes and 55 seconds to listen to the audio description for this piece. If you continue straight ahead, on a wall to your left, near a large cylindrical column, is a screen playing Jody Mack's Blanket Statement No. 2, All or Nothing. You may enjoy putting the headphones on to listen to this piece. A tad further, you'll find the entrance to Senga Nangudi's Warp Trance. This is the second exhibition area. This large installation is given its own room that measures about 16 feet long and deep. The room is carpeted, so you will feel a transition in the flooring as you enter. Hanging from the ceiling are long panels of jacquard punch cards in three groupings, onto which a three-channel video is projected. There is a soundtrack for this installation, which features industrial sound. Exiting the room, the exhibition galleries are mostly open. This is the third main exhibition area. Perpendicular to the entrance of Senga Nengudi's room, and 10 feet ahead, is a freestanding wall containing two artworks on either side. If you head around the right of the wall, you will encounter William Cobbing's Grog Cave. The cave is a structure that juts out from the wall about 3 feet. There is a mat underneath it, so if you use a mobility device like a cane, you will feel the mat before you bump into the sculpture. To listen to the audio description of this work, jump to 16 minutes and 35 seconds. To your right, about 14 feet from the cave, are a series of 6 ceramics on tall tables. The tables are sitting on a platform that is low to the ground, 12 feet long by 6 feet wide by 6 inches tall. This is a piece titled To Have and To Hold by Lauren Kallman. There are 3 video screens on the wall behind the 12-foot platform, and there is enough space between the wall and the platform to comfortably navigate. Continuing along the back wall is Richard Vision's Hyperthread, a series of 9 woven tapestries that mimic the electrical currents of microchips in bright neon and metallic threads. This installation takes up about 12 feet of wall space, about the length of a dining table. Just beyond Vision's work is a wall that juts out perpendicular and is 8 feet long, the length of a standard sheet. If you round the corner of this wall, there is an entrance to a very small room that is painted black. This is the 4th exhibition area, and it is quite small. A video by the artist Beryl Karat, titled Eddie, is projected on the wall, and it is the only light in the room. The video has a soundtrack that sounds like rain. There is a bench to sit on in this space. If you exit the small room and head east, you will be in the Make Art Lab, where there is a hands-on weaving activity. You are welcome to sit and weave for as long as you like. A video by William Cobbing titled Screensaver is playing on a diagonal wall just to the left of the entrance. In the video, human hands reach out of holes in what looks like a wall covered in clay. The soundtrack features drippy, squelchy sounds as the hands grasp at the wet clay. Circling out of the Make Art Lab the way you came, you're back in the exhibition galleries. If you take a right turn, on the wall to your right is Kira Dominguez Hultgren, I'll Meet You in the Atmosphere. This work is participatory, and yarn and scissors are available so you can weave directly onto the piece. Ask an MCD staff member for help if you like. Heading north about 12 feet, in front of you is Danielle Andress's Untitled, 1993 to 2021. This is a series of 8 woven panels, each 18 by 18 inches, hung in a grid. The imagery is taken from a found amateur porn video and features a female nude, but she is obscured behind traditional weaving patterns like gingham. Moving west along this same wall is a small wall-mounted sculpture with fluted glass that makes a lenticular effect, titled ADHD Party by Sydney Cash. Further west down the wall is a woven wall hanging in bright red, green, and blue yarn with black paper as the warp thread, titled RGB by Sarah Rosalina. To your left, on the back side of the wall that holds William Cobbing's Grog Cave, is Kelly Egan's Ethereum Felix Femina, for Anna Atkins. Jump to 24 minutes and 45 seconds to listen to the audio description for this piece. Back to your right and heading 6 feet further west, there is a large screen playing Ari Lee's Bojagi, Memories to Light, a video that looks like a kaleidoscope made of mid-century home movies of Asian American families. If you face west, a projected video plays Shahir Zazai's ECFDV_EC, a screen recording of the artist creating a colorful floral pattern using only Microsoft Word. This is playing on the back of one wall that constructs Senga Nengudi's room. If you turn to your left and walk 7 paces or about 18 feet, then turn right, you'll be able to walk straight out of the galleries back to the lobby. Kate Narker, Green Screen, 2026, Jacquard-woven cotton. As you enter the galleries through the opening from the lobby, to your immediate left will be 2 QR codes, one containing the link to this audio description, and the other will link you to translations of the wall text in Spanish, Arabic, and simplified Chinese, as well as large print labels you can read on your mobile device. However, a few steps ahead of you and a few feet to the right is a 17-foot-long woven textile. It hangs from the ceiling at 13 feet high, so the bottom 4 feet of the textile loosely cascade onto a low platform on the floor. The textile is about 4 feet wide, and the platform beneath it is 6 feet wide, so the white platform is visible on either side. You are looking at a piece made by artist Kate Narker. As an artist, she works between animation and weaving to dismantle images, narratives, and material structures. Narker is an assistant professor of textile design at North Carolina State University, where she lives in Durham, North Carolina. The woven base textile is a chartreuse color, a mix between yellow and green, reminiscent of early spring growth. On top of the woven base are horizontal line pattern embellishments, woven in an emerald green thread. The patterns, though woven into the base layer, seem to float over the top of the chartreuse base, giving a three-dimensional quality to the textile. Called overshot pattern, this style was brought over by early Scottish and English settlers in the United States and is commonly found in woven coverlets or bedspreads. The patterns are psychedelic. They begin at the top of the textile, where the dark green thread completely covers the base layer. Each section or frame of the pattern is about 6 inches wide by 4 inches high. Scanning downward, the base layer peeks through in plus sign shapes that grow larger in a sequence from the left edge to the right. The patterns get more complicated as they descend down the textile, as if the symbols were replicating themselves. One plus sign turns into four, then dark green squares grow from the center of the plus sign, separating it into 8 pieces, then more, until it starts to look like a computer's motherboard, with thin lines on each edge and thicker squares toward the center. About 1/3 of the way down the textile's length, the artist has hand-dyed the fabric to create blotches of purple concentrated at the right edge. The purple blotch bleeds all the way to the horizontal center of the piece. The emerald green thread that forms the pattern is not altered by the dye, only the chartreuse base layer. The pattern fragments and comes back together as it continues down the piece, morphing and becoming more complicated and then more open from left to right. An area of orange dye bleeds from the left edge towards the bottom where the textile hits the platform. The pattern in this area is sparse and reveals mostly chartreuse base layer, so the orange is very vibrant. The artist weaves this work on a TC2 loom, a digital weaving machine. After it is complete, she scans the textile and uses it to create a stop-motion animation. Suddenly, it makes sense why the pattern advances left to right and down, like reading lines on the page of a book. Each frame of the animation corresponds to a 6-inch wide by 4-inch high section of the pattern. Directly behind the textile in the exhibition gallery is a bright screen about 4 feet wide playing the animation, which ends up being about 1 minute long but is played as a constant loop. All of the intricacies of the overshot pattern are shown in vivid detail in the animation. The framing zooms in closely, So one 6x4-inch frame on the textile fills the entire 4-foot screen. As if the cloth was under a microscope, you can see the space between the woven base threads. Stray threads or hair occasionally get caught in the frame for a fraction of a second. The framing of the video is so close, you can imagine what the threads would feel like on your skin. The animated pattern moves sometimes linearly, where it grows or shifts incrementally. Other times, the animation moves in spasms, where the pattern flashes and becomes uncomfortable to watch. The title of this work is Green Screen. In film, a green screen refers to a temporary backdrop, eventually replaced or made invisible. Nartker's green screen reveals the illusion of this concept through weaving. Just check the backside of this textile, and what green seems to have disappeared on the front reappears in the back in recto verso fashion. Animation entails the joining of imagery in quick succession, such as in flipbooks, film stills, and pixels. But the construction of a textile, weaving, is perhaps the ultimate method of unifying image-based content with its physical material. While animation or film usually rely on a reduction of texture to capture a sharp picture, Nartker amplifies it, creating a haptic visuality that delights the eye through fuzzy tactile sensations. To the left and below the screen are two samples of textiles that you are encouraged to touch. On the left is a scrap piece from the actual work, Green Screen, and on the right are three pieces of fabric that were used as experiments. The artist worked with a grad student to incorporate braille into the weave of fabric using different textures of yarn. The braille could contain useful information like color, fit, or care instructions.
William Cobbing Grog Cave, mixed media, 24-inch screen inside a clay wall-based sculpture. If you head east from Kate Narker's piece, about 25 feet, William Cobbing's Grog Cave is hung on a freestanding wall to the left-hand side, parallel to the main gallery walls. Cobbing, a London-based artist, began making videos during the pandemic as a way to stay connected to his practice. The figures that emerge from his sculptural and performance works often appear to be caught in a temporal state of metamorphosis, blurring the boundary between body and earth, ancient and modern. Grog Cave is a lumpy, gray, rounded structure made of clay that seems to grow out of a white wall. It protrudes around 47 inches from the wall. The structure is smooth, with uneven slopes and dents that are concave and convex, resembling the surface of the moon. Clay is a central material in the artist's work, both in its raw and fired forms. The artist values the abject qualities of his chosen material, the squelching, slimy, murky qualities of wet mud that both attract and repulse. At the center of the structure is a rounded, cave-like opening for viewers to stand under to watch a series of videos on a 24-inch screen. Within the interior of the cave, the structure forms smooth bumps, lumps, and slopes resembling its exterior. Upon entering the cave, you may be able to detect the smell of pungent wet pottery, damp soil, or a subtle mineral note, which comes from the artwork's earthen clay material. The small cave opening is dark, but becomes illuminated by the video screen. The video monitor plays several short videos. One video shows the artist wearing a black shirt against a swampy green background. The artist's head is covered in a large spherical mound of raw red-brown clay resembling terracotta. The clay mound is covered in small impressions and imprints of the artist's hand, creating pockmarks, bumps, and lumps in the surface. The artist's hand and black t-shirt are covered in raw, wet clay residue. The artist holds a piece of wire stretched between their hands, like dental floss, and begins to slice at the clay starting from the top of the head downward. You can hear the slapping of clay slices as they fall to the ground. As the artist continues to slice, holes in the clay appear. The holes contain vivid colors of periwinkle and sky blue thick paint, which slowly pour out and drip from the holes. A hole is made on the upper right side, then at the bottom of the head, and lastly, a hole along the left side. You can now hear squelching sounds, like hands digging in mud. As the artist continues to slice through the wet clay and paint, a face appears. Similar to a sunglasses emoji, the two eyes are uneven, drooping holes, and a wide horizontal mouth forms. Once the face is formed, the artist stops slicing. For around 20 seconds, the artist continues to be still. The chest and head of the artist sway back and forth slightly, while Technicolor paint continues to drip out of the clay head. Another video shows the artist with a raw, gray-colored clay head that is covered in small finger marks against a mauve background. Attached to the head are three realistic hands, also made of raw clay. The three human-like hands are sculpted with realistic accuracy, with wrinkles and grooves. Two hands are placed on the head where two eyes would be. The hands are in a slightly grasping gesture with the palms facing outward. The third hand is placed at the bottom where a mouth would be. However, the back of the hand is facing out, also posed in a grasping gesture. The third hand's wrist and forearm extend down from the chin and hovers above the artist's black shirt. The artist's own hands and black t-shirt are covered in raw, wet clay residue. Slowly, the artist delicately feels around the three clay hands by lightly touching them. Then he grips onto the wrist of the lower hand and tugs hard. With the pressure of a suction cup or plunger, the clay hand comes free from the head. A rectangular-shaped hole appears where the hand was placed, filled with viscous streaks of lime green, bright orange, and canary yellow paint. Immediately, the paint oozes out of the clay head. The artist then delicately feels around for the two upper clay hands for around 6 seconds before pulling the hands. First on the viewer's left side, and then the right. Green and orange paint flows out of the holes of the clay head like thick, melted chocolate from where the two upper hands were placed. The three holes in the clay head resemble a smiling cartoon face. And like the previous video, once the face is formed, the artist stops moving. For around 20 seconds, the artist continues to be still. The chest and head of the artist sways back and forth slightly due to the weight of the clay head, and paint continues to drip out of the holes. There are 7 videos in total. 3 feature sculpted hands that the artist pulls from the clay head, 2 show lumpy spheres, and 2 others show protruding, downturned cones that the artist slices down like deli meat. All videos end with many holes in the clay head or an emoji-like cartoonish face. Each hole has multicolored paint pouring from it. Cobbing is interested in the cinematic, the secret world of special effects and making objects for the screen. The contrast between the use of digital technology, the videos were first exhibited on social media, and one of humankind's most ancient technologies, clay, suggests the constructedness of everyday life and the masks we assume. When the artist's films are viewed in the grog cave, the brightly colored paint spilling out of his clay mask becomes all the more embodied as the viewer's head is similarly entombed in clay. Kelly Egan, Aetherium Felix Femina, 2016. 35mm hand-coated and handmade cyanotype gelatin emulsion, animated optical sound. As you round the corner from a movable wall placed towards the north wall of the gallery across from the video work of Ari Lee, you will encounter an object that at first glance looks like a medium-sized quilt, one that could cover a twin bed. This work is made by artist Kelly Egan. Egan is an associate professor in cultural studies at Trent University, and she lives nearby in Peterborough, Ontario, Canada. Her work combines the material history of film with the feminist history of craft, and specifically textile practices. The quilt is hanging from the ceiling on a clear plexiglass dowel that runs the entire width of the quilt. It hovers about 3 feet off the ground, and there is a platform beneath it that juts out 4 feet into the space from the movable wall. The platform is 6 inches high and is painted white, as is the wall behind the quilt. The quilt's colors are shades of blue, ranging from a deep blue, the color of deep ocean or blueprint plans for architects, to a lighter sky blue, and they are interspersed with areas that are clear, taking up the color of the white wall behind them. This quilt is an on-point lattice pattern, which means that big diamonds of color are bordered by strips of another color. In this case, the border is transparent and the diamonds are blue. Each blue diamond is about 14 inches across point to point. The clear border is about 5 inches wide and surrounds each diamond, so it looks like big X's are running vertically and horizontally across the quilt. Touching each point of the blue diamonds are blue squares, about 5 inches on each side. These are at the nexus points of each X. There is a clear border and a blue border framing the perimeter of the quilt, which is 66 inches by 87 inches, or about 5.5 feet wide by 7.5 feet long. Within the blue diamonds and squares are areas of negative space that reveal the silhouettes of Aetherium Felix Femina plants, known colloquially as lady ferns. The ferns have delicate, lacy leaves that float out like an ostrich feather from the central stem. Other plants, like maple leaves, also appear silhouetted. The artist printed directly onto 35mm film using a recipe for cyanotypes pioneered by early photographic artist Anna Atkins. Atkins was the first photographer to have her work published in a book in 1843. Titled Photographs of British Algae, Cyanotype Impressions. The artist made cyanotype prints of regional botany and algae. The cyanotype emulsion was of her own recipe. Cyanotypes work by exposing a light-sensitive chemical emulsion to the sun. The sun turns the chemical a dark blue, so anything that was blocked from sunlight remains white or clear. Cyanotypes were short-lived as a dominant form of early photography and later reappeared in the domestic space as a way to decorate linens and clothing. Following Anna Atkins' recipe, the artist of this quilt, Kelly Egan, painstakingly, quote, coated each clear film strip with the emulsion, then exposed the film strip to the sun. Sometimes for more than 4 hours, with the plant laying on top to create a print. Interspersed with the images of lady ferns and maple leaves are diamonds that look like they are printed with tight stripes. When you get in close, you see that the stripes contain tiny images. They are, in fact, strips of found film footage that the artist printed directly on her blank film with the same cyanotype emulsion. The footage features a young girl being taunted by bullies who hold a spider in a jar near her face. The artist likens the footage to Anna Atkins' own experience in the world of photography. Despite her status as a pioneer, she was written out of history in favor of male photographers like Henry Fox Talbot, who is widely credited as publishing the first book of photographs. To the right of the quilt, on a large monitor hanging horizontally on the wall, plays a video that flashes the same blue colors as the quilt. The video is 4 minutes and 20 seconds long. It is, in fact, a digitized version of the quilt I just described. The magical thing about the quilt is that the artist sewed it together through the sprocket holes of the film, and it can be disassembled, spliced together, and played through a film projector. It is first and foremost a film, though the pattern of the quilt dictates its form. When watching the video, flashes of white indicate the clear film, which is followed by flashes of dark cerulean blue with abstracted close-up images of the fern prints, then clear again, and then a few seconds of the found footage. The film flows through the diamond pattern dictated by the quilt and is jumpy and disjointed. Many frames are divided in half as they made up the diagonal sides of a diamond, so one half is dark blue and the other is clear. Each frame only shows for a split second before going to the next frame, so it can be difficult to watch. In the digitized version we see here, the sprockets of the film are visible on both sides. There are headphones available to use below and to the right of the monitor on a hook. If you put them on, you will hear the soundtrack of the film, which sounds like layers of industrial popping, humming, purring, and buzzing. The artist has used optical sound to create this soundtrack. Optical sound on film is a clever system that stores audio as a visual pattern right on the film strip, then converts it back into sound during projection. Optical sound works by deciphering light and dark patterns on the side of the film. The sound varies depending on how light or dark the patterns are. Here, the optical sound is generated by the cyanotype emulsion, which has been painted directly on the film. So the sound is very dense in areas that are darker blue and eases up slightly during the frames that are clear. If you put on the headphones and close your eyes, you can imagine the quilt running through the projector, starting from the upper left-hand corner, and imagine which areas are blue or clear as the sound intensifies or lessens. Thank you so much for visiting the Museum of Craft and Design. This exhibition will be up at the museum through August 16th, 2026. We hope you enjoyed the artwork and that you'll visit us again.